This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427JOY949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
In sport, where many competitions are separated into male and female categories, what defines an athlete as eligible when looking solely at their testosterone levels can create a problem. The IAAF new rules create a problem that is almost exclusively experienced by those intersex athletes wishing to compete in the female competition. There's a belief that the main advantage male athletes have over female athletes is the level of testosterone their bodies produce during physical development. Intersex athletes often produce higher levels of testosterone than non-intersex female athletes. The argument is, therefore, that allowing intersex athletes with high testosterone levels to compete in female competitions gives them an unfair advantage. But most athletes are not within the normal range of bodies. They all have some sort of advantage over what is seen as normal. We don't ask tall basketball players to shorten their legs, so why is it okay to make any athlete take medication to lower their testosterone levels? Sex is the only recognised category of discrimination in sport. We acknowledge that there's a difference between male and female bodies, and we don't make them compete against one another, because it would be unfair to female athletes. But it's time to acknowledge when it comes to the intersex population, changes to the rules need to be made, but not ones that further alienate. Look, there's therefore a precedent for making rules based on sex characteristics, but is it really creating a level playing field for all athletes to be able to compete? Or creating an alienating environment where athletes who may or may not be intersex and sit outside the presumed box that is acceptable are left with one option: to take drugs to regulate your body to fit these guidelines, or possibly even surgery, instead of being able to compete at the range that you've trained for and lived your whole life. Rachel Tyler-Jones continues our conversation with Morgan Carpenter, Co-Executive Director of Intersex Human Rights Australia, formerly OII Australia, as we look specifically at the rules that have been created that affect Caster Semenya from competing. Is this discrimination? Does Caster Semenya even have an intersex variation? It's time we look at the ethics of creating rules and structures, as well as reporting on the validity of people's bodies who are part of the intersex population. And the current state of affairs regarding Caster Semenya highlights this.
I think really what we see with these guidelines is that one athlete is being singled out for quite horrific reasons. Some research was published by IAAS clinicians that identified five events where they claimed there was a statistically significant advantage for women with hyperandrogenism, like high levels of testosterone. Now, the research itself has been contested because it looks like the results that they've got are an artifact of the way they've done their analysis. So other people, for example, publishing in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, have contested those outcomes. But they identified these five events, including the hammer throw and the pole vault. But in the guidelines this year, they have a different set of events. They've excluded the hammer throw. They've excluded the pole vault. They've included a couple of longer track events. And those are events where Caster Semenya competes. So it does seem like it's very focused on one particular amazing, hardworking, talented black South African athlete. But we've never had confirmed publicly that Caster Semenya has an intersex variation. So the whole nature of these guidelines, it means that they are de facto outing Caster Semenya, and that's ethically quite problematic. Really, what they're doing is targeting one particular athlete, and they are targeting intersex women. So therefore, they are making this connection that this athlete has intersex variation when she has never confirmed that publicly. So there's all this press coverage about Caster Semenya that kind of assumes that we know facts about her body and her life, but we don't actually know. And this kind of speculation about her body is not one that we would accept from very many people. We don't know that Caster Semenya is intercept because, I've seen at least two or three different versions of test results that are claimed to have been leaked that give very different accounts of her body. And really, people should not be sharing that information because it's not public information. It's not confirmed, it's not verified. There is this difficulty with the new IAAF guidelines because the guidelines use the word intercept. The guidelines use a clinical term for intersex called differences of sex development. So they're very tightly focused on women with a small range of intersex variations.
Caster Semenya is obviously a very famous example in this scenario. Are there many other intersex athletes competing that we know of?
Well, you've qualified that by saying that we know of. And as you can tell by the way that Caster Semenya is treated in the media, there are not many athletes that want to put themselves in that position. There are athletes that have been through this situation facing Caster Semenya before. There have been athletes like Santi Soundarajan in India who attempted suicide because of the humiliation involved in excluding her from sport. There are athletes like Maria Jose Martinez Patino, a Spanish runner, who a couple of decades ago was found to have XY chromosomes and androgen sensitivity. That was disclosed publicly. She lost her home because she lived in this kind of athletic facility. She lost her career. She lost a relationship. She lost pretty much everything in her life. So this is kind of what happens. I mean, when women in sex variations are discovered in this sporting environment for these sporting purposes, they are not people that have gone through this kind of internalized process of identity formation, of self-discovery, of coming out. They're people that are suddenly discovered to have what is framed as a medical condition, and their worlds are torn apart. Now, to say that a woman in that situation who has been assigned female at birth, has been socialized as a woman, who identifies as a woman, should compete in some category for people with a different gender identity is like telling you that you should all compete in categories that do not match your gender identity and your sex. So the idea that we need to protect women's sport from these women athletes with intersex variations, I don't think stands up to scrutiny because this is just such a tiny range of events. Having all kinds of women compete, all kinds of women who have lived their lives as women, having all of those women compete does not create any, you know, whole-scale problems. I mean, I've seen claims, for example, that having intersex women compete will end women winning medals, but that's just completely ridiculous when you look at the small number of events that are singling out.
That was Rachel Tyler-Jones reporting with Morgan Carpenter, Co-Executive Director of Intersex Human Rights Australia.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.